Welcome to the XCast X-Files Podwatch, episode 80, covering all things and Brand X. I'm your host, Aaron Mooney, and with me is Tanya Hernandez, writer at Beef for Techie.
Yes.
Perfect, got it in one. Pleased to meet you, Tanya, actually.
Nice to meet you, too.
It feels like we've been planning this a while. To be honest, I think we've got some good ones to talk about. I think perhaps one has more talkability, I think, than the other one. So we'll jump in sort of straight into that one, which is the 17th episode of the 7th season, which is All Things, which is spelt all using lowercase letters as well. Notable because it's written and directed by Gillian Anderson, who I believe was, first of all, obviously she's starring in the show. Second of all, I think she's the first female director the show has had. And one of only two, I think, that it had over the course of the run. Because it obviously had Michelle McLaren's first directorial credit was in the 9th season. She obviously went on to become sort of this huge television director. Anderson, sort of as a writer and director, was a bit more low-key. I mean, Duchovny had written an episode in the 6th season and in the 7th season in Hollywood AD in The Unnatural. But All Things was really the only episode that Anderson wrote. And I'm a little bit disappointed when it came to the relaunch that neither of them really sort of stepped into that role of sort of writing and directing their own episodes.
Yeah, I would imagine maybe it's because it was been hard enough for them to fit filming the reboot into their schedules. So I'll chalk it up to maybe, you know, they just didn't have time to write or direct an episode either one of them. But I would have liked to definitely seen Gillian do another episode, because this is one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, okay.
Out of the season, it's one of my favorite Scully-centric episodes for sure, and definitely one of the better episodes in season 7. Season 7 is kind of where the fall off starts, you know, before we get to the last two seasons. But definitely one of my favorite Scully episodes.
I'm kind of curious to hear this. There are parts of this that I admire, and there are parts of it that I don't admire. But I'm actually kind of curious to hear your take on this, Tanya. Like, so what is it about All Things that really sort of speaks to you and grabs you?
Well, I think Scully being the skeptic all the time and never seeing the aliens and stuff like that, you know, we get to see Mulder's search for the truth, which is like the biggest through line throughout all the seasons. Whereas this is like one of the times where you get to see Scully search for her own truth. And it may not be the truth about aliens, but the truth in, you know, is there anything other than science to hold on to? And this definitely, Scully's faith has always been the other side of Scully that gets touched upon, you know, and I guess that's her search for her truth, whether or not she can really believe in things other than what she sees with her eyes and touches with her hands. If she can actually believe in faith, in, you know, the unknown, in something that is not tangible to her, you know. So, and I think this definitely is a big focus of that is in this episode, and it definitely helps show that other side of Scully. Like, she has her own questions. It may not be alien related, but it is in areas that, you know, are completely foreign to her. But, you know, meanwhile, her being such a, you know, devout Catholic, that was always the thing. Like, how can you be a woman of science, but you still wear that chain and still believe in that, but you can't believe in these other things, you know? So I thought this episode really did a good job in talking to that.
I do, because I actually think that's one of the fascinating things about The X-Files, just as a teacher, because you reduce it down to Mulder is the guy who will believe anything and Scully is the skeptic. But the truth of it is, when you're watching it, it's a lot more complicated than that, because you mentioned sort of the conflict that exists where Mulder has things that he very clearly won't believe in, like he won't believe in God, for example.
Right.
But
right.
Scully, on the other hand, she has that sort of contrast. You point out the idea that she won't believe in aliens and she's driven by science and rational thought. But you also have that paradox where she's got this very strong religious faith that's played out, I mean, in episodes like Revelations, All Souls, all these earlier episodes. And I mean, I like that aspect of All Things. But like, one of the things that I find a little frustrating about, a little sort of that doesn't really sit with me particularly well, and is kind of feels kind of awkward, is the emphasis on, say, Buddhism within the episode, in that like Scully has been defined as somebody who is Catholic and Christian, and it feels kind of strange that her in this episode her religious enlightenment comes through Buddhism, because that feels very much like the show's sort of new ageism sort of shining through. One of the things that actually I don't like about the episode, like I'm it's the homeopathy element. So the idea that when people who have cancer or people who have heart attacks, that they're sick because of things in their lives. And it's sort of like the X-Files, obviously it's a show about vampires and werewolves, and you have that sort of monster element, that sort of like larger than life sort of things that exist outside the normal framework. But I've always been skeptical of the inclusion of like homeopathy and New Age stuff in it, because it feels like that stuff is more sincere and more earnest. And it's like, you know, a liver-eating fluke monster doesn't actually exist, and that's fine. But there are people who actually believe in things like that your cancer is caused by the fact that you are not a good person or you've done bad things, as opposed, and that you can be healed by like releasing that. Like there's the lesbian couple here, which is actually quite interesting because it's one of the few X-Files episodes with a homosexual character,
right,
as opposed to say X-Cops earlier in the season, where the portrayal is actually very sensitive and very sort of nice. It's actually, it's rare to see that in a 90s TV show, and it's rare to see it in the X-Files. So it's great to see that, but it's kind of tied into this sense of very New Agey stuff that makes me uncomfortable, I think, a little bit.
I think that was the point probably Jillian wanted to have, is it does make people, where some people are, it's easier, even Scully, it's easy to believe, you know, in Catholicism or Christianity teaches because that's the norm. Even she has an area that she is not sure about. And I guess Buddhism and like New Age stuff is something that everybody, for the most part, is like, kind of like, what? Like, now you're going into it. You know, people are like, what's that magic voodoo? Like the doctor says, that voodoo ritual you put on me, you know? And I guess that's the purpose of it, to like go into that uncomfortable place and question it and say to yourself, question what you believe. Like, maybe, you know, I don't have all the answers. Maybe my religion isn't the one only answer. Maybe science isn't the one and only answer to solve all the, you know, to resolve all those questions. So I feel like maybe that was the purpose of it, to make you feel uncomfortable and to think about it that way, because it certainly made Scully uncomfortable. You could see when she goes to the that woman's house the first time, how like she just wants to get out of there, and you know how terse she is with her. And she even apologized, like, you know, I don't, and she says, I don't understand what it is you do. And, you know, and that's kind of why I had that attitude, you know. So I can appreciate that's, you know, she does broach that topic. And, yeah, it's going to make you uncomfortable, but it makes you think.
It does. I mean, like, I actually like quite a lot of it. Like, I like the broad strokes idea of Scully questioning the decisions that she brought her to this point. And most obviously, at the very start in her monologue, she asked the question of, like, is it a decision that brings you to these points, or is it a lack of decision? Do you let basically your life unfold without any active involvement in it and follow the path of least resistance? And that's one of the interesting things about Scully's arc when I've rewatched the show, is that you pointed out that like Mulder is the driving force in many ways, his sort of search for the extraterrestrials and the X-Files. And it kind of comes up in like Never Again when Mulder is like, well, this is my life. And Scully's sort of like, well, what does that mean for me? And I think you sort of see an element of that here, where it's like where Scully's sort of reflecting on the path not taken, with obviously when she visits the old college professor, the man with whom, you know, it's sort of, was there an affair? There was definitely something inappropriate there. She moved away before it escalated. And he sort of like the path not taken, which I think is a very Scully angle to take on a story like this, and a character sort of development. I think that Scully is a character who's largely influenced by the choices that she didn't make. Mulder's life went off in a very straight line after he discovered Samantha had been taken, but Scully's sort of taken a more roundabout way to get where she is, and I really like that aspect of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason why, like, when people say who is your favorite, Mulder or Scully, I always say Scully, because as much as I love Mulder, he's been pretty much the same person since the beginning of the show, with, you know, some changes here and there, but his, you know, his tagline is the same, you know, I want to believe, where Scully started off in one place and has gone through so many changes to the point where now she is more open than she was when she first started to things. This episode kind of, it's one of my favorites because it shows that progress, that change in her, that all those, you know, another piece of the puzzle as to, you know, making her become the person that she ends up being by the time we get to the new season, you know, and it just shows that progress over time, you know, how she, maybe if she did follow that original path, she never would have thought to listen to this woman and talk about like auras and stuff like that. You know, what would have happened if she did stay with that doctor and he ended up getting the heart disease with her because he would have been still real guilt-ridden because he had left his family. You know what I mean? Like, she would have never thought to say, okay, maybe you need to release this guilt, because she would have been in it. You know, who knows? You know, it's fascinating to see her progress that way, and this is like one of those episodes that shows that progression, that growth in her.
It is, and it's kind of one of the things I like. Actually, Anderson's direction is very interesting here, I think, because I really like that metronome that she gives to the world, the recurring shot of like the pencil tapping against the desk, the window sort of blind batting against the wall. You have this sort of idea of the world having a heartbeat, which is very, very well like reinforced, and there's this sense of movement throughout the episode. You get these wonderful sort of cuts where characters move and then they're cut. You get the face of like Daniel Waterston cutting into her face as she's moving and he's moving. There's a lot of movement in here, which I really, really like. And there's also the use of Moby's music, which occurs, like, you see it a lot in the seventh season. I think it was also used in Closure. And you have this sort of, this weird sense of like, Anderson's direction point almost feels like a music video. I don't mean that in a disparaging way, because there's a...
Right, right.
But it's this idea of like a narrative that's told through movement and sound as much as it is as literal dialogue, which I think is very good.
Yeah, that I made a note of that, like the repetitious patterns throughout the scenes and stuff. And then, you know, you notice it and you're like, you know, why is it done that way? And then when she's talking to the physicist, she says, like, do you ever have moments where everything is clear and you can see everything? And then you realize, okay, every time she notices those patterns, or you notice those patterns, those are her moments where she's like getting that weird sense of things, you know, like time slowing down or coming to a realization and things like that. So you see, like, it's put into the episode, and then you can follow that throughout. And then, you know, when she says it, then it's like, oh, okay, I see where that comes into play.
And I mean, one of the things going back and watching The X-Files sort of as a snapshot of history is this idea of like watching it as a relic of the 90s, and you have obviously have the Moby soundtrack there, but I'm watching it and I'm thinking, like, in the context of 1999, do you think maybe the relationship between Scully and Daniel Waterston was maybe meant as sort of a Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton thing? Where you have this idea of like the young intern or the young student who's sort of seduced inappropriately by a more senior fellow who's involved, who has a family, and she's blamed as a result. Like, it's very clear that Waterston's family blames Scully. And I actually sort of, I was watching that in the context of 1999 or 2000 when this aired. I'm sort of wondering, was that something that was at the back of Anderson's mind when she was writing it or when she was directing it?
I mean, obviously it's touches upon it, but I don't know if she directly was trying to reference that. I mean, if anything, it would have been a little earlier. Her motive was maybe just to show more to Scully than what we think, you know, just like with Never Again. There's like a bad side, you know, like a bad girl side to Scully, or a rebellious side to Scully. And this shows, again, like, that's always been something, a personality trait of Scully. Never following the rules, going, you know, on her own path. She always wanted to hang out with her brothers. She didn't follow the directions of what her father wanted her, you know, for her career and stuff. She kind of did her own thing because, you know, why should I just follow what everybody else wants, you know? In this moment, I guess, where we get to see, you know, she did something that normally you would never do, but for whatever reason, she was fascinated by him, you know, his intelligence. She was probably more mature than most people, you know, emotionally and stuff like that. And, you know, whatever Lolita complex this guy had, or whatever midlife crisis this guy probably was having, you know, she went for it. And she probably did genuinely love him, but she, I guess, being the more mature person in the relationship, decided, no, we can't do this. I have to leave. This can't work.
Like, I can't destroy a family.
You know, I can't destroy this family. And him thinking, you know, you would think he's the older, more wiser doctor, is like, no, you know, I left my family and I moved to DC 10 years ago, like, looking for you. Like, what? Like, you just up and left your family? Like, that's why she's like, how could you do that? You know? And to her, some other person would be like, oh, that's so romantic. But she's like, what? Like, no. Like, why would you do that? You know,
creepy.
Like, I moved on. Yeah, you know? it's pretty interesting to see that dynamic. I mean, maybe there was a hint of, referencing the whole Monica Lewinsky thing, but in this case, she was definitely not in the same mindset as a Monica Lewinsky. She wasn't just, I don't think she was just infatuated with the power of this man or anything. Like, I think there was like a genuine admiration for his intelligence and for his sincerity towards her, but then after coming out of that haze, she realizes, like, no, this is wrong,
Is there anything else you want to say about All Things, actually? Anything else about the episode that jumps out at you?
I did put this is the Scully isn't having any of your shit episode, especially in the beginning. I thought it was just hilarious how she's eating the salad and she's just like totally not paying attention to Mulder. It was really, I thought that part was funny. It's a really good episode. It may not seem like a normal, quote unquote, X-Files episode, but episodes like this I really tend to enjoy because it's more of a side of Scully that we don't get to really explore very often.
So Brand X, which is the 18th episode of the seventh season, it's directed by Kim Manners. It was written by Siba Madia and Greg Walker, who were two sort of exiles from the much maligned and very early cancelled Harsh Realm TV show. It's very much a standard Monster of the Week episode. It's notable for the performance of Tobin Bell, who many people may know as Jigsaw.
Jigsaw, yep.
Playing the other cigarette-smoking man, Daryl Weaver. Aired in April 2000, it would have been released shortly after the film The Insider, actually, which was about the exposing sort of the 60 Minutes episode looking into the big tobacco and the sort of the methods that they were using. And it's another one of those episodes, like I talked about, All Things feeling very topical and very 90s in some ways with its use of Moby. Brand X also feels very 90s in terms of its big tobacco sort of, scandals within the cigarette industry, sort of like getting ready to testify about the evils of what big tobacco are doing. But it's a very simple, conventional, old-fashioned Monster of the Week episode for me. What about for yourself, Tanya?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I thought it was a decent episode. It's one where you have Skinner actually doing, like, working a case, doing a protection detail for this whistleblower that gets killed on his watch and has to like rely on Mulder and Scully to help him clear up this mess because he doesn't have any idea how this guy gets killed. So, but otherwise, it was pretty typical standard X-File episode.
It really is. It's very, very conventional, very straightforward. And I mean, you can sort of see that, I think, in the seventh season. It gets very, I don't want to say tired, but you can see the show's maybe run its course at this point. Like, there was an argument this was going to be the final season. And I mean, a lot about this episode feels rote. You can almost predict the big story beats as they happen. And it's like there's very few surprises in here. I mean, the most interesting thing for me is the fact that the character of Daryl Weaver, who's played by Tobin Bell, who's notable because Tobin Bell just has a screen presence, but there's this element of like pathos about him. Like, there's a sense that he knows that this is the most important thing that is ever going to happen to him. Like, he has this big monologue at the end when he's facing Skinner, where he's talking about like he's advancing science. He feels like he's part of something. He feels like he's moving the world forward. And even though he's just this guy who smokes cigarettes, he's not a scientist. He doesn't understand the mechanics of it. He's covered in grease. He's wearing like his clothes are like massively his clothes are all sort of worn down and beaten, and he's living in
Right.
this dirty motel. But to him, it means something to him that he's actually making a difference and contributing to science, despite the fact that he's murdering and blackmailing people.
He feels like I wrote that note down that he actually feels special for once. Like, wow, I'm gonna have my name in a journal somewhere. Like, like that's what just that line says, like, for once he's special. He's not just some bum on the street, you know what I mean?
Again, he's not an overly complex character. Like, you've had this character with, say, Pusher, for example. He's very popular in Vince Gilligan episodes. You have this idea of the little man who dreamed that he was big. But there is something like Tobin Bell just makes him pathetic and dangerous. And I think he's the best thing about an episode that's otherwise very, very bland, I think.
He does definitely bring something special to a part and to a, episode that was kind of meh. But, he definitely elevated it that with, with that character. So,
So, Tony, is there anything else that jumps out at you about Brand X?
The disgusting bugs eating people's faces up.
From the inside out.
From the inside out. I mean, you know, we go back to...
I love the gory X-Files.
Yes. I mean, that's always... that's the other highlight. It's like, oh, yeah, nice, good old crazy X-Files episode. Twice we get to see, like, just people's jaws just eaten up and then, like, along with worms in it and Mulder getting worms sucked out of him and stuff. And again, you know,
we're gonna need to crack the thorax.
Yeah, like, what? Like, you can't break Mulder's chest bone. What's the matter with you? Yeah, it was good. It was that part I always enjoy, you know, the fact that, again, they got away with this on network television, like, before you had, like, a Hannibal now that really got away with stuff. I think if this didn't happen, you know, Hannibal wouldn't have gotten away with what they got away with now. So it's always fun to see, like, you know, the gross stuff in the X-Files.
Yeah, but the corporate security guy with his mouth open and the bugs just crawling all
Yeah,
over
just crawling
him.
Out, yeah. Yeah.
Daniel Brimley, actually, played by Richard Cox, who popped up in Millennium as well. But anyway, so I think with that in mind, then we'll wrap up. But so, Tanya, where can we find you online?
I am on Twitter at Amazon Agent, one word. You can also find me on Instagram at that. And my site that I write with a couple of my friends is at bfuteki.com. And we also live stream gameplay, video gameplay, tournaments, things like that on Twitch. So twitch.tv/bfuteki.
You can find me online at The Movie Blog. I host the podcast The 250, which you can find on iTunes or wherever good podcasts are not sold. I also have a book, Opening the X-Files, which is available now for e-readers, and it's available on Amazon to order in paper as well. Meanwhile, in terms of the podcast itself, you can follow the podcast at @X_cast. We have a Facebook page and group. And we'll be back tomorrow we won't be back tomorrow, but people will be back tomorrow with episode 81, which will be covering Hollywood AD and Fight Club, which is, I think, a very eccentric mix, maybe, for the late 7th season. So anyway, in the meantime, we'll see you tomorrow, and remember, trust no one.